Hi, this is Linda Holmes from Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm here with my buddies, Stephen and Glenn. Hi, guys.
Hey.
Hey.
Well, we are here to share something very exciting, which is that because it is Pop Culture Happy Hour's 10th birthday this summer, we are having a virtual live event. It is going to be on Thursday, July 30th at 8 p.m. Eastern. Glenn, what do we have on tap?
Well, we got friends of the show, Kumail Nanjiani, and NPR's own Sam Sanders. So two different kinds of superhero.
That sounds pretty exciting. Stephen, what should people do if they want to help shape the quiz that I'm going to be administering?
Well, you can go to nprpresents.org.
All right. We are excited. You can celebrate with us. Again, head to nprpresents.org, and we're going to all have a happy hour together with our buddies, and we'll see you there.
Taylor Swift was supposed to spend this summer touring with songs from Lover, an album she'd put out last August. Instead, she wound up cooped up at home. The isolation sparked her creativity, leading her to write and record an entire new record in collaboration with producers Jack Antonoff and Aaron Dessner. It's called Folklore, and it's a massive left turn in terms of style and subject matter, and it's already earned Taylor Swift some of the best reviews of her career. I'm Stephen Thompson, and today we're talking about the brand new Taylor Swift album Folklore on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, so don't go away.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Vrbo. Summer is here, and vacation is just a drive away. Search thousands of nearby vacation rentals on Vrbo to find your family a private home all to yourselves, where you can spread out, chill out, and feel that vacation feeling again together. Book the home that makes the vacation. Download the Vrbo app. That's V-R-B-O.
Welcome back. Joining us today to talk all things Taylor Swift, we have two of our pals from NPR Music. From her home in Nashville, we've got Ann Powers. Hey, Ann.
Hello, Stephen.
And also joining us from St. Petersburg, Florida, Lindsay McKenna. Hi, Lindsay.
Hey, how are you?
It is great to have you both here. Now, it is hard to overstate the number of surprises here. Taylor Swift is usually extremely deliberate in how she schedules her music and kind of plans out her career. Her career is typically choreographed years in advance. No one saw Folklore coming. The album was announced less than 24 hours before its release on Friday. And then there's the album itself, which sets her words against these lush acoustic arrangements that evoke folk music and chamber pop. She's also singing from a new range of perspectives. She's taking on the personas of people that she's sung about in the past, giving Folklore a real sense of like artistic empathy. Now, Lindsay, I know you to be a big time Taylor Swift fan. You introduced Taylor Swift when she performed at the Tiny Desk last fall, and I know how excited you were about that. How do you think that Folklore compares to her other albums?
That is all factually accurate. I am indeed, I think, the junior Taylor Swift correspondent following after Ann Powers, who would be senior Taylor Swift correspondent for NPR Music. So, of course, I was excited. Of course, on Thursday morning, I saw the Instagram post go up. And of course, that's how she announced the album. And honestly, I freaked out. I couldn't believe the idea that she was working with Aaron Dessner of The National. I have been a longtime fan of both Taylor Swift and The National for more than a decade. I think that this is her most even album. Across her discography, Taylor's always had sort of like singles that aren't reflective of the record, that just do not really lend to her artistic abilities. I don't think that they represent who she is. And here I think that you've got really an even record that is so reflective of where she's at in her career. The songwriting's front and center. It's called Folklore. And I think at its core, it's really a record about stories and the way that we tell them, the way that we tell them to ourselves and to others. I'm thinking a lot about the way that earlier in her career, Taylor Swift was kind of called out for playing into these fairy tale tropes. Of course, she was a young songwriter. But now I think that she's playing with point of view in a way that just makes for such impact going back to those same sort of like childhood love, thinking about the way that we tell stories and the way that we pass down that. I think that the way that she structures the songs is just like a huge leveling up. She's always got this ability to, in the final act of the song, do a reveal. And I think here it's to such impressive effect. So I cannot speak highly enough of Folklore. I know that I'm going to keep digging into it. But right now, I just think that this stands out as something that, one, I didn't expect her to make, but two, I'm so glad that she did.
How about you, Anne?
Well, Lindsay, I just have to turn it back to you for 1 second, though, because this is also a remarkable event in terms of synchronicity of your taste. I think you should address this, because the biggest surprise of Folklore isn't that Taylor's becoming a more mature songwriter. I mean, I think she already was a mature songwriter. And it's not even the sound. It is who she's collaborating with. And it's kind of a perfect marriage in your opinion, right, Lindsay?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when I saw the credits listed on the album, I thought, okay, Taylor's paying attention to NPR music. Like, I think that we've got someone who's paying attention.
To you, Lindsay, to you specifically.
So yeah, Aaron Dessner is sort of the sonic mastermind behind so much of the production of The National, that he co-produced or co-wrote 11 of the tracks here. And he kind of brought in his cohort of collaborators who work with The National. And for Taylor, a lot of people were blown away by this, thinking, like, since when does she pay attention to this band, this scene? But she's actually had a long history of paying attention to them. She's added them to her playlist. She saw them at Saturday Night Live back in 2014, according to an interview with Pitchfork that Aaron Dessner gave. And she went to their Prospect Park show, I believe it was last summer. So Taylor has had an affinity for this band. Here, it's very clear that she's applying that palette that he's so known for, this orchestration with his collaborators, and putting her sort of identity to that palette is absolutely mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, Lindsay, is there a song on Folklore that you think, like, best represents that marriage of, like, Taylor Swift and also, like, The National Aaron Dessner?
Yeah, I think that the way that his production works on Invisible String is a really, really compelling fit for her voice.
Time, mystical time, cutting me open then. Just so pretty to think all along there were some invisible string tying you to me.
Ooh. She's using that speak song style, and the way that the instruments loop, it's really reflective of what he does on a lot of National records, on a lot of stuff that he produces. And I think that it just is such a natural marriage for her voice.
We have to talk about Folklore, I think, not only in terms of artistry, but also in terms of Taylor Swift's career. She is 30 years old. She has been a superstar since she was a teenager. She has done the pop thing to the absolute ultimate. And she's trying to figure out, you know, how to continue what has been a remarkable and in some ways almost unprecedented run. I mean, 8 albums with arguably no dip, you know, no dip in popularity. Yes, Reputation, some people had issues with it, but it was still a massive seller and massive subject of conversation. And here she is at a place where very few pop artists ever get. So how does she make a turn? How does she make a turn to, you know, continue and become more innovative maybe and explore different aspects of herself? And I think she has done it beautifully and more seamlessly than a lot of people are giving her credit for. There are definitely connections, as you know, Stephen, I think we've talked about this, between this record and Lover. She was already exploring this territory in a way, not directly, not through connection with Aaron Dessner, but I see this record as a continuum, not an abrupt about face.
Yeah, Taylor Swift is an artist I've often kind of appreciated more than loved. You know, I think she's always had pretty remarkable songwriting talent. I've been very impressed with her ability to navigate the worlds of country and pop. Just being successful in both of those fields is very, very hard. I've always been impressed with her artistry, but as a persona, I have found her frustrating. And I think the way I would sort of sum it up is, like, I think of her as somebody who is extremely self-conscious without being self-aware. That came through the most with her album Reputation, which felt to me like this album that was about being Taylor Swift. And that's not what I'm interested in as a listener and as a consumer. Like, You are now singing about what it is like to be you instead of reminding listeners what it's like to be them. I really liked Lover. I liked the way that she was singing kind of about grander themes and not just singing about like what it's like to be Taylor Swift. And it's really interesting. I listened to this album and then watched her movie Miss Americana, which is streaming on Netflix. And it's this kind of documentary about where Taylor Swift was at in her career, kind of around the time she was making Lover. And I was watching it and I was like, oh my God, I felt for the first time like, oh, I get her. She is somebody who is deeply affected by how she is perceived. And so she is constantly gaming out any move that she makes. And so this record shatters that. This record, it feels like she is making this record in collaboration with friends she trusts, is writing songs that they're very deliberate. They're tying into very carefully thought out lore. I don't mean to suggest that they are tossed off in any way. They're deeply deliberate, but they're not burdened by like, how is this going to play in stadiums? What are people going to say about me if I sing this? Oh, this is going to get people talking. These are just gorgeous songs. I was stunned by this record and just, it is so consistent. There's not a bad song on it and just immaculate. It is beautiful to listen to. Taylor Swift has made songs that I have loved. She's never necessarily made an album that I've loved until now. It is one of my favorite albums of the year, and it's possible to overstate Aaron Dessner's contributions to this record because this record sounds so different. I think the quality of the lyricism on this record is, you said leveling up, Lindsay. I think the lyrics on this record are leveled up. It is quotable, it is thoughtful, it is perceptive, and it's beautiful.
I kind of disagree, Stephen, because these songs are still very confessional. I mean, yes, she takes on different characters, but she is still writing about her own situation. She's just doing it in a way that's a little more sophisticated. I just don't see this as such a huge break. I don't see this as like, oh my God, Taylor Swift, now it's a revelation. I feel like she's evolving and this is a step in her evolution. A good example would be the song, My Tears Ricochet. Let's hear a little bit of that song.
I didn't have it in myself to go with grace. And you're the hero flying around safe. And if I'm dead to you, why are you at the wake? Cursing my name, wishing I stayed. Look at how my tears ricochet.
So what is that song about? The first time you hear it, you might think, okay, here it is, another breakup song. Many people think, and I tend to agree, that yes, it is a breakup song, but it's not about a breakup with a man or a lover. It's about a breakup with a record label. This song is likely about Taylor Swift's struggles with her old label, Big Machine Records. So here she is crafting a song about one of the most difficult experiences of her life, leaving the record label that nurtured her for so many years, but which ultimately, in her view, took advantage of her. And she has really struggled to regain control of her music from them. So My Tears Ricochet is a great example of how Taylor Swift takes something very specific, very confessional, really specific almost only to her, this experience, and opens it up into something universal, something that you or I can relate to, not because you or I are mega pop stars who have parted ways with the corporation that owns our music, but because we have all experienced a sense of betrayal and loss of self-ownership in a way that this song really depicts. The sound of it is totally Bon Iver. The sound of it goes in a new direction. But the approach she takes, I think, is very classic Taylor Swift.
There's been a lot of questioning about, like, is this the record that people wanted Taylor to make? She's cited Joni Mitchell and James Taylor's influences, and I think a lot of people wanted her to sort of, like, pivot back to country inevitably, or sort of adopt this singer-songwritery mode that was more akin to maybe what she was getting at on Lover. I am not quite certain that this is the record that I wanted her to make or expected her to make. However, I am thrilled with what this has come to mean. I don't think that you can get to Folklore without her experiment with hip hop on Reputation or sort of like trying to go back to that brighter aesthetic on Lover. I just don't think you get the jump from her working with Max Martin directly to Aaron Dessner. And I think that Jack Antonoff was sort of really a person that fit well with her style, that she was updating sort of these 80s modalities. But with Folklore, I think that you finally get this sense of a person who feels comfortable abandoning sort of the big pop impulse to fit in the influences of the moment and really adopt a palette that maybe isn't her primary mode, but fits with what she's doing so well. I love the way that she can use Dessner's orchestration with all of his collaborators to give her the ability to do the sing speak that she does so well. Taylor's voice has never been her strongest asset. And I think that her being able to adapt and sort of like unfurl these really detailed and nuanced sentences across the bridges that he creates is marvelous. It is masterful. And it is truly her recognizing that this is something that she can work within. I think that there's restraint, and that's not something that was always associated with her work.
People are often, I think, somewhat disrespectful when they talk about Taylor Swift, in that they act very surprised that she has matured as an artist. Yes, she started in a teen pop mode and she wrote incredible songs when she was still an adolescent about adolescent life. But she's 30 years old now. And let's think about what other artists were doing when they were 30. Joni Mitchell made Court and Spark when she was 30. Stevie Wonder made Songs in the Key of Life when he was 26. He was well into his masterwork phase by 30. Mick Jagger was 29 when the Stones made Exile on Main Street. You know, in the 90s, Polly Harvey was just over 30 when she made Stories from the City, Stories from the Sea. Elliott Smith made Either Or when he was 28. In every single one of these cases, this was adult music tackling adult themes made by adults. So why are we surprised that Taylor Swift is a mature songwriter? She is a grown woman. I think it's really, really wrong that the general conversation around Taylor is always as if we are amazed that she's taking baby steps. She's far beyond that.
Yeah, I agree completely. I also think listening to this record, I was really struck by this is an album that would not exist in all likelihood without the pandemic and could not exist in the summer of 2020 if Taylor Swift weren't suddenly forced to pull back and self-isolate. And I mean, nobody knew this album was going to exist, so the expectations surrounding it are completely different from the expectations surrounding everything else she's ever done. To me, this album feels so liberated in a way. It is absolutely, Anne, as you said, the creative product of a grown person, but it's also just like the creative product of somebody who has been freed. I will be so interested in hearing where she goes from here. I've never been this excited about Taylor Swift as an artist, and I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. I think, again, a lot of people, when you see the track listing, you kind of like tense up a little bit and you worry that it might just be another set of confessional songs. But because she's using these characters to explore reality, like there is such artistry in that.
Lindsay, you said very rightly, this is about storytelling. And of course, it's called Folklore. But what is folklore if not a body constructed of memory, a shared sense of the world built of misheard stories and much repeated stories? And I think Taylor takes that on in a very personal way throughout this record, that idea that we each have our own folklore. This is her folklore. That's what's beautiful about the lyrics on this record.
Yeah, I mean, I've spent the weekend listening to this record and I'm constantly coming away with a different favorite song. And that's a sign that you've got a really great record on your hands. Let's actually go out on what is currently my favorite song from this record. This gorgeous, swirling, beautiful song. Let's hear a little bit of Mirror Ball. Well, we want to know what you think about folklore, what you think about Taylor Swift, what you want to think about Taylor Swift circa folklore. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Thanks to you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for having us, Stephen.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you want more song recommendations, make sure to check out the excellent podcasts from NPR Music like Alt Latino and All Songs Considered. We will see you all on Friday when we'll be talking about the Netflix reality series, Indian Matchmaking. Highest hills, love, shining
just for you. How do you maintain a friendship in the middle of a pandemic?
Including our last restaurant meal. My last restaurant meal was with you. I love that.
Wow.
Aminatou Sow and Ann Friedman gave me some friend pointers. They host a podcast called Call Your Girlfriend, and they wrote a book all about friendship. Listen and subscribe now to It's Been a Minute from NPR.